There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, Ted, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. A couple hours of live local talk, and I'm glad you are here. Of course, we're streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. You can also get us through the TuneIn Radio app. And remember, TuneIn Radio, not only a way to stream the station, but they also are one of the many places you can subscribe for our podcast. And I've pointed out before, you can get them a la carte if you want to by just going to fmtalk1065.com and clicking the podcast tab. But you can get them iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Deezer, any of those platforms, they're on there. And obviously, as I've looked back at the numbers on 2020, y'all, a lot of y'all figured that out, and appreciate it. Appreciate the downloads out there and the good comments and the thumbs up and all that kind of good stuff. So thank you, thank you. All right, this hour, and coming up, we mentioned next hour, we'll talk to Spanish Fort Mayor Mike McMillan. Heard the news about the Amazon Distribution Center. We'll get into some details on that coming up next hour. But in this hour, I do want to have a conversation here that that came up over the weekend, and it's one that kind of dovetails in with some stats that are rolling out. Of course, you've heard this so far. You heard it on the morning show. You've heard it on the news reports. The new high number of COVID-19 patients in state hospitals. There's a record 3,064 people in state hospitals as of yesterday with COVID-19, according to ADPH. Well, what does that mean for us in Mobile County? And the next part of this story, the conversation that happened over the weekend with family members was, if somebody wants a vaccine, how do they get in line? Do you sign up? Who do you contact? I think those are pretty solid questions, and we're lucky to have from the Mobile County Health Department, Dr. Scott Chavers joining us again on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me back on.
I appreciate it, and we'll have you back on. The day we don't start having you back on a lot will maybe be good news.
Because this, I can't wait for that day, actually. Yep. No offense.
No, and likewise to you. But until that point, we'll continue to talk about this. Let's talk about that record number of cases. It says 3,064 people in state hospitals as of yesterday. So those are all COVID cases?
Those that are, when you see that number, that are hospitalized with COVID, that is attributable to COVID-19, yes.
So, okay.
Go ahead.
So those are people in hospitals that were checked in because of a case of COVID. That doesn't say, because we'll get to the other parts of it, the ICU beds and the ventilators and that kind of stuff. But that's just people that tested positive for COVID, went into a state hospital that are there now.
That's correct. Okay. And they could have come in and, had symptoms come in, been tested. The physician looks at them and then says, you're fine to go home.
Okay.
And then that you have the people that are actually in hospital. So that's the number that we really watch, are those that are currently hospitalized.
There's like the overall number, like you said, people that have come in and got a positive test for COVID. Some go home, some stay there. And I guess if you stay there, that doesn't necessarily mean you're in intensive care, or does it? I mean, does anybody go in for COVID and then they're put just in like a bed rest? You see what I'm asking? What kind of level?
So what you have to consider is that, COVID-19 is an infectious disease, and you really don't want COVID-19 infected individuals in your hospital if they can recover at home. So you're trying to get them in, figure out what's wrong with them, give them a plan to take care of themselves, and then get them home. The problem, not the problem, but those that have severe disease are the ones that you're keeping overnight, and sometimes for days on end, And those are the ones that you really have to manage their symptoms in hospital. So, for instance, you know, in Mobile County right now, we have 213 patients that are in the hospital for COVID-19. They're not the ones that went in, were checked, and then sent home.
Okay. So those are the people that that stayed at the hospital from their situation. Now, the next part we hear, and I don't have the number right in front of me for some reason, but the number of people on ventilators in the state.
Right.
That's going to be a subset of that number of the people in the hospital, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So things have changed a little bit on how COVID-19 patients are managed. So back when the epidemic first started, a lot of COVID patients were put on ventilators. And now ventilators are reserved in treatment for other types of interventions, like, you know, the monoclonal antibodies, some of the therapeutics, et cetera. So we're not as quick to use ventilators on patients as we were back in March.
Well, are there any other, like, big changes to how COVID cases? I know you probably can say there's a variety of different cases or levels, but how you're treating generally treating cases now versus how they were treating those cases in March or April?
Yeah. So what's interesting is when COVID-19 first hit, you know, the hospitals, really no one knew how to manage those. They were going off of, you know, how you manage influenza and how you manage some other types of you know, lung infections. And some of those older, they're still contemporary, but some of the ways you manage other diseases don't work with COVID. In fact, can be counterproductive. But, you know, one really interesting thing is the physicians and nurses figured out if you'll just roll somebody over on their stomach instead of their side or their back, they do better. And that can offset the use of ventilators many times.
That's pretty amazing because we would think that, you know, you're going to say, Sean, it's this high-tech thing or this big science thing, and we'll get to those. But something learned as simple as the orientation of the patient, being on their stomach versus their back.
Exactly. And it's simple things like that, but can often result in not having to use that ventilator. And for everyone that you don't have to use when you don't have to use it, frees up the vent for the next patient. But the ventilators actually are not, we're actually in pretty good shape with the ventilators.
So, because that was one of the concerns, right, in this spring when we were flattening the curve or whatever the discussion was at that point, there were only X number of ventilators, and people were saying, look at Italy or places like that where we do have the ventilators we need.
We do.
Okay.
Back when the COVID curve really started to take off, it overwhelmed some of your things that we consider, you know, kind of standard of care now for COVID-19 because you didn't have the ventilators just sitting around. And this has allowed for production of the ventilators and some of the other materials that are needed, you know, to ramp up to address the pandemic.
All right. Next, we've got so many questions here. I do want to, because we'll get into vaccine talk here in a second. Let me ask this one before we go to the news. Bob says, how many folks are coming in that have the flu? I don't hear much about the flu this year. It's all COVID. This is something that, you know, somebody's asked us before when you've been on. So
yeah.
Can you walk through that?
I can. Yeah. So it's interesting. One of the things that we've observed is that in the Southern Hemisphere, which is, you know, their flu season is exactly opposite from ours, they had reduced levels of influenza because more people were wearing masks. So that helped out quite a bit. Now, whether that absolutely transfers over to the Northern Hemisphere, where we've yet to see, we have to remember that the peak flu season for Mobile County starts in January and goes through, kind of depending on when Mardi Gras falls, can be the end of February or into March. And it also coincides with when kids go back to school from the holiday breaks. So we're not sure, you know, if we're going to get a big reduction in influenza this year. We think we will. And it's because of several things that are going on to protect us from COVID.
All right. So the unintended or intended consequence of the mask is other airborne particulate-borne disease virus doesn't move you know, same thing that keeps COVID from moving as easily because the mask, you're saying, is giving us lower cases of flu.
Absolutely. And things like washing your hands. I think if your listeners think about it, for those of your listeners who do the things that to prevent COVID, if they think about it, they probably haven't had as many common colds this year either. And because things like washing your hands and wearing your mask and staying away from people are really good interventions for a lot of different things, everything from the common cold to RSV to other respiratory viruses, like you said, up to COVID.
What about this, the surge in cases, you know, this question that you look at a holiday or time that people get together, and then you go, what, a couple weeks afterwards and look for these numbers. So Christmas and then New Year, you see two waves coming. Do they all get pushed together? Is this kind of how, I mean, are y'all looking at, is this now the wave, what we're seeing? Is this the wave coming off the holidays, or is it like a New Year's wave coming too?
Yeah, there will be. So it's interesting. I actually will take you back to an earlier holiday, which was Halloween. So we put a pin on our calendar on Halloween and said, okay, for the next 14 days, we're going to see a spike in COVID cases. And that's exactly what happened. And then with Thanksgiving, you know, when that occurred, we saw another spike. The difference between what we're seeing now and for Halloween and Thanksgiving is, you know, the end of the year holidays, starting, you know, with, you know, the different religious holidays all the way through to New Year's, that's a prolonged holiday season. And you have more Christmas parties and get-togethers and exchanging gifts. And so for every event, again, it was very predictable. You could put a pin in the calendar, and you could kind of watch the curves go up, and then the next event would occur. The problem was is the next event would build on what had occurred in the prior event, if that makes sense. So we were perpetuating the number of cases because each of these holidays were adding on to a background
right.
of infected individuals. So it's just this tidal wave that keeps moving through that does. It builds on itself as we add more events.
Don't these waves in a way hamstring a future wave? Because you have these waves, right? These market increased number of cases. Then those people get better, go back out. Now they're not a carrier. They're not susceptible to getting it for some period of time. We can talk about what the research has shown and how long you may have, you know, antibodies to it. But don't they, in the nature of this wave, should come with a very flattened or lower point afterwards because you have fewer people to carry the virus?
Yes, absolutely. So if somebody's infected and does recover, then they will have antibodies. In every case that I'm aware of, against, you know, the virus that causes COVID-19. So they are protected at least for a time. And that is, so part of when we talk about this concept of herd immunity, when individuals are infected naturally from what's called the wild type of the virus, to distinguish that from what you might get from vaccinations, it does. It helps reduce transmission. The problem with COVID-19 is that it's one, very, very infectious, even compared to influenza, and two, it enters into new populations. So if you think about kind of your circle of friends, if that circle of friends is infected and you just stay with them, for the most part, everybody's okay. But the next time you go home to mom and dad, and they have never been exposed, you're taking the virus with you. And so the issue is, yes, we are getting immunity, but we're also getting these infections into new populations that are propagating or continuing the spread of COVID-19.
All right. We'll talk more about the spread. Look at England on a lockdown. About this new strain. I know we actually talked about it before it got in the news. Dr. Chavers and I talked about it. We'll talk about it again, too. What about the vaccine? And oh, there's a new strain. So what does that all mean? We'll get into that. Your questions as well at 343-0106. And then coming up, we'll talk about the vaccine rollout. When when and how you get in line.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our discussion with Dr. Scott Chambers from the Mobile County Health Department. So working off of the story, the headlines you hear, and we try to fill in here on this show, headlines will tell you we've got a surge of cases right now. And it's something that Dr. Chambers and other folks said, you know, was coming. You have these holidays and you have a spike afterwards. You know, we're in a discussion about kind of the herd immunity and people contracting the wild strain of COVID. Something that I've wondered about prison facilities is a whole nother discussion. It came up when Sheriff Cochran was on the show and talking about Alabama Department of Corrections not taking state prisoners out of the jail and taking them to the prison because they're worried about COVID. I'm not getting the politics of that with you, but just as a, I don't know, as an experiment center, don't you have a chance of having like a study of herd immunity in a prison setting if you don't have anybody new coming in and maybe vaccinate the guards or something? Because nobody's coming in or out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a place to research or look at?
Well, believe it or not, there have actually been studies in institutionalized populations like prisoners. So one of the things that that you could figure out is roughly how long a time did it take in terms of contact. So let's say a guard goes up to a prisoner. How long did they have to stay around them before they would contract SARS, the virus that causes COVID-19? And some of our best estimates actually come from looking at videotape from prisons and watching a guard walk around prisoners and came in contact with somebody that was tested positive the next day, and we could figure out roughly what the minimum time could be just talking for somebody to transmit. So, yeah, institutional populations are interesting because they can be closed systems. Most are not. And ethically, just in terms of how you would want to manage someone that you know is infected, you know, you're going to want to cohort, or I use the term cohort, you want to combine all your positives in one place so they're not really causing an issue in a prison. But things like tuberculosis, we learned so much about tuberculosis from those that are, you know, in jails and in prisons about how things spread.
Yeah, you were talking during the news break with me about learning things. Go back. You mentioned smallpox and learning from that. Kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, well, so you and I were talking a little bit about how some people will recover, they show no signs or symptoms, all the way up to some people, you know, don't make it out of the hospital. And that happens with many of the very worst diseases you can think of. So for me coming up, it was, you know, HIV, AIDS, Ebola, and then in part of, you know, when you go to university and you start learning about infectious diseases, smallpox is one of those. And if you talk to your grandparents, you know, they may talk about polio. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, like in the case of polio, that, well, 10% of those ended up in a wheelchair and the rest recovered. And with smallpox, you know, many, many recovered from smallpox. And the only thing they had to show for it were little pox marks. But many, many went in the ground over it. And so I was saying to Sean, it would be easy, if everybody's body functioned the same way, this would be an easy job for us because you could predict exactly what's going to happen. But we're all wonderfully made and we're all wonderfully different that sometimes it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen with people.
Yeah, I mean, it was anecdotally talking about that, to, you know, kind of, myself and somebody else my age, we're almost exactly the same age, same kind of body build, all those kind of things. And, you know, I was sick for a while, for like 4 days, and had the quarantine. And then, you know, and then this person is fighting for his life. So,
yeah.
What,
There's several factors. I wish I could give you one. There's several factors that can kind of play into that. One is the person. So, you know, how good your immune system is, for instance. And it can be recognized immunity, or it can be things that you wouldn't know unless you had a lab panel drawn. You know, how good are your CD4 cell counts? You know, you'll feel fine, but you may have white blood cell counts that are low. And if you're exposed to COVID, that is not going to help you. So there are a lot of issues just internally with us that go from diet to exercise to obesity to cardiovascular disease to genetics that, you know, do play in terms of one dimension of how well we're going to do. And then the next thing is the virus itself. So, you know, how big of a viral load did you actually get?
That was the part, and we're right up against the bottom of the hour news. I want you to hold on to that because it's something we've talked about before that I think is, this is the, like, I've used it in Sullivanese here, my redneck talk, would be, if you got your one COVID, Dr. Chambers, versus 50 COVIDs, how would it affect you? We'll get that answer and more when we come back. More with Dr. L. Scott Chambers of the Mobile County Health Department right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Talking to Dr. Scott Chambers with Mobile County Health Department. A lot of great text here, too. Brian in Fairhope says, Sean, my wife and I, because this kind of goes back to the flu thing Dr. Chambers was saying. Brian says, my wife and I usually carry a cold all through fall and winter. Sometimes we get the flu, not this year. Mask wearing, hand sanitizing, and not shaking people's hands has kept us healthier than ever. So that's Brian in Fairhope. Also, Bob says, but humans are not designed to stay away from each other. I am so afraid for our future. But what does it say about human interaction in the future and our other health problems that stem from isolation? And that might be a good segue into some of this conversation that's just beyond COVID, correct?
Yeah. Well, so I think Bob's question is a good one. Let me just say that this is not the first time that people have gone into quarantine. So we're not, we went through what we think was a lockdown, and I'm just speaking of this about what I have read, but we have not locked down like we have historically. If you look at what happened in 1918 with the so-called Spanish flu, and other things like smallpox, where, you know, the local municipality would come and put you in your house and would put a sign on your door and says, this house is quarantined. You know, that we are not at that level, but I hear what Bob is saying. What I would say is, if you look at the risk of letting this virus propagate to its full potential versus continuing what we're doing, and we're still losing right now, but at least we're keeping it somewhat abated. You know, we're going to get through this. We as a society are very resilient. You know, I have worried about my kids at points going, well, you know, what they're missing. History has shown us that we are a very resilient population. I would love to go meet Bob at happy hour and whatever, but the risk of doing that right now far outweighs the risk of some of the other social things that are going to come out. But again, I agree with Bob. This doesn't happen in isolation. It affects a lot of different people. My mom wants to go to church so bad it's killing her.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are in that situation, and it does. It affects, I think, older folks, too, that don't have as many things going on, and these events where they go see other people. It's the whole week, right? It's the big thing. Something else we had talked about, too, at the beginning of the show, the stats here for hospitalizations, and then, you know, kind of talk about, does that mean ventilator? And you said no, but we have the ventilators needed. But you mentioned to me that it's not as much about just beds and ventilators as it is physicians and nurses and staff.
Exactly.
Explain that. Walk folks through that.
So, and I'll give you some data to back this up, but it you know, early on we were concerned about ICU beds and ventilators, and rightfully so, because they were all at capacity. But the thing that you want to worry about, if you want to worry about something, is the nurse and the doctors that are taking care of patients. So the data that is disturbing for me is, if I look at the state of Alabama and look at different causes of death, not COVID deaths, right, but different types of deaths, most of those categories are elevated. And they're elevated when I compare those to the 5 years before February 2nd, which is when COVID officially started in this area. And what that tells us is that those individuals that are dying because of lack of access to care, not so much access to technology, meaning the vent. So if you've got a nurse where he or she has been on their feet for 48 hours and they can't do what they normally do, or if you're sitting at home, you know, watching a football game and you go into cardiac arrest and they can't get you, one, because EMS can't get to you, or two, everybody's on diversion at the hospital, that's the effect of COVID-19 outside the actual virus. And that concerns me quite a bit. Yep. And the data are showing that. So, you know, you may not die from COVID-19 directly, but you may die as a consequence of how that's affecting our healthcare system. Primarily those that are given, you know, that are caring for you, not so much the technology.
Yeah, what you're laying out is a very direct situation. There's not the person there to take care of you in time, you know, for the heart attack. But what about, we talked about this in the spring, and I know there's been a lot rolled out that things are fine and people should come in and get their checkups, but there may be people that are skipping, you know, a checkup where they'd find something they need to deal with, right? They're not going into the hospital for something that would be not elective surgery, but a routine checkup or a routine screening.
Right. And I don't know if you remember or not, but, you know, some hospitals canceled elective procedures, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And that was done to prevent either individuals bringing COVID-19, the virus that causes COVID-19, into a closed system like a hospital, or having that person be infected or potentially be infected in the procedure. What we are seeing in a lot of the data is that your nursing staff, your physicians, are not being infected by the patients or necessarily transmitting to the patients, but they're infecting each other. And if you've ever worked in a hospital environment, you know that very often it's shoulder to shoulder, it's face to face when you're dealing with patients that make it almost impossible. Well, you can't socially distance when you're working on a patient. And even though you've got the very best mask, you know, you just get tired. And that is what's affecting a lot of the healthcare providers. But to your point about, hey, should I go get screened? Absolutely. Should I go get my vaccinations for my children? Oh, my goodness, absolutely. You should do that, because those are critical components of the healthcare system that have historically been shown to through screening or through vaccination, to keep you healthier longer. And you need that against COVID-19. If you do that, you have to put on that mask, socially distance, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use hand sanitizer, and if you are truly sick, stay at home. That's the key.
You mentioned the vaccine, so let's use that as a pivot here to get into the vaccine talk. First of all, because I want to get into what goes on here, but you and I have talked about this last time, and then there's probably 10 days of lag, and then it became a news story about the new strain everybody's talking about, the more infectious strain of COVID-19. Can you give us the Wikipedia entry on that, the cliff notes on it? What is it? And and then the next question, of course, is, will we need a different vaccine?
Okay, so So the Wikipedia would start like this. So the virus that causes COVID-19 is based on RNA. That's how it transmits. It's like other things you've probably have heard of, like HIV is in that category. It's not the same, but they're RNA viruses. And every time they go through our cellular mechanism to reproduce, and they have to get into our cells to reproduce, they change slightly. And they change genetically. And when they change genetically, that changes the way they look when they put themselves back together. I hope that makes sense. I'm trying to do the Wikipedia.
Right, no, that's what I need, yeah.
Okay. So there are actually, so last time you and I talked, we talked about a new strain coming out of the UK, and that strain has a change in what's called the spike protein. That's that red part when they show pictures of the virus on TV. That's the red part. That's the spike, and the spike is what actually opens up the cell for the virus to get in.
It really does, like, it pries open. I mean, it pierces it, or...
It's a lock and key. Think of it as a lock and key mechanism.
Okay.
So Wikipedia would say that the virus has got a key, and it finds a lock on the cell, and that key fits that lock, and it will turn, and that lets the virus enter the cell. It's a little more complicated than that, but when it opens that door, then the virus itself moves in. It hijacks the cellular system to make more virus particles. So what happened was in the UK, as the virus was reproducing and it had one of these changes, it changed that little red area or the spike protein. There are changes all the time in messenger RNA viruses. But this was a big change. This was what is called, so small changes are called drifts. Big changes are called shifts. This was a big shift. There's also another one that's coming out of South Africa that has just done the same thing. But the one we're watching right now is the UK variant, because that's the one that we're seeing in the United States.
But if somebody gets the vaccines we're talking about, Pfizer or Moderna or anything they're going to be fine with that vaccine.
So all the data currently shows us that the current vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, are they have efficacy. They work against these new strains. What's concerning, and I don't, this, please nobody panic over this, because everything is fine now, but the part that the vaccines mimic is that spike protein, and that's what changed in the UK variant. So it wasn't like I'm going to use a Russian roulette term. It isn't like the hammer fell on the bullet, but that's how it happens, is that you get one of these changes that nothing will touch.
Gotcha.
Right now, we're still fine. There are some implications around the change in terms of us being able to detect the viral strains. All of the current testing systems will still pick up the UK strain. There are some issues with the South African strain that we can't pick up. If there are continued shifts in the UK, there may be some issues with being able to detect the virus. The other concern, though, is that this new strain in the UK is twice as infectious as the original UK strain that we ended up with here in March. And that is concerning, because that means that the number of people that we have to vaccinate to hit herd immunity goes up now.
Just joining us, talking to Dr. Scott Chavers from the Mobile County Health Department. I want to do this. Let's talk about the vaccine rollout, because I got questions about that aplenty. The vaccine rollout for Mobile County, for us right here. How's it going? What about the numbers? And then the question I had from family members this weekend that are older, that says, do we get on a list? Do we sign up? How do we know when it's our turn?
Yeah, good. Those are great questions. And so I'll try to make sure I get through all those, Sean. You may have to shut me up on one of the other topics. So when the two vaccines were approved about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe for Pfizer now, the CDC sat down and said, okay, we know that we're going to be very, very short on vaccines. And we know that we've got to vaccinate every person twice to complete the series. So what they did is they set up phases based on those that are at high risk of either acquiring the virus or very bad outcomes. And when I say that, that's my way of saying these people are more likely to die. It's based on kind of setting up risk categories along that. So who may get it, who may have bad outcomes, and then kind of some ethical distribution questions around making sure we cover everyone fairly. So right now we're in what's called phase 1A. And what we're currently doing in the state of Alabama, and let me come back to that. In the state of Alabama, we are at 1A.
Okay.
That means that we are currently vaccinating the healthcare personnel that we've already talked about are so critically important, and those individuals that are in long-term care facilities, such as your nursing homes. So we've already talked about healthcare providers are more at risk of being infected, and you have to have people to take care of the rest of us as we're sick. And then those that are in long-term care facilities are more likely to not do well if they're infected with COVID-19. So that's the risk assessment that was done. That's why 1A is currently in being vaccinated. The next group, which is 1B, will be everyone 75 years of age and older. So why is that? Well, if we look at our deaths, they tend to occur in individuals that are 75 years and older. I will say that that actually moved up, because originally when we were going to do this, it was going to be 65 years of age and up. CDC looked at how much vaccine we had and said, you know what, we've got to go up to 75 versus kind of a risk-benefit analysis.
All right, so I mean, there's real decisions. That's good. That's refreshing to know that there's decisions made like that, that, yeah, we'd like to do 65 and up, but we don't have enough vaccine to get that done right now.
Exactly.
Okay, that's
exactly.
Good. That's the facts we need.
And then also at the same time, so in 1B, all of our frontline essential workers will be included. So these are going to be our police officers, our firefighters. There has been a new recommendation that we also include school teachers because of their environment. But so there are a lot of individuals here in Mobile, potentially includes a large number of individuals that are working for some of our defense contractors, because they are considered frontline essential workers that are critical for national security. So that, if you look at it, that's a very big group, and that will be our next phase that we move into. You asked me currently, like, Mobile County, where are we? Well, we at Mobile County Health Department, we ordered 500 vaccines to do an initial rollout. We have four left sitting on a shelf.
Four.
We gave all of those over about a 3-day period. That's all we have left. All of the hospitals in Mobile, and I apologize if I'm not getting this 100% correct, but all of them either are out of vaccine or they are, if they have vaccine, they're already allocated, meaning there are people that already have appointments and they're going to be vaccinated. And again, these are individuals that are in that 1A category. So healthcare providers primarily, the nursing homes are being handled through a little different mechanism through CVS and Walgreens.
Okay. So that there's not. So when is the next allocation coming for Mobile?
Yeah. So the next allocations will start hitting at the end of this week, early next week.
And at that point, is that the 1Bs or is that continuation of 1As?
We still have to continue to 1A, and we have to wait until it comes down from Montgomery that we can officially move to 1B.
Okay, and so that date, Montgomery hadn't set that date.
That is correct, and it will be data-driven. So let me just say, some of the phone calls that we've been getting, and thank y'all, everybody that's been calling in, to ask these questions. We have heard about Florida, Tennessee, Louisiana, and then some, you know, kind of off the wall things of, oh, but my, you know, my teenage son was offered a vaccine. Oh, well, okay. But if you look at the state of Florida, is already moving into a different phase of vaccination.
Are they in 1B or are they?
They are in 1B, and they, in some cases, are all the way down to the 65 years of age and older, and focusing on individuals that have some of these high-risk conditions. The reason that they're able to do this, and this is not statewide, it's in pockets, is because everyone ordered vaccine based on what we thought would be the need. And in some areas, there were pockets of people that said, I don't want the vaccine. Well, that led to additional vaccines that allowed for some areas to expand coverage. We are not in that position. We in most areas in Alabama, we are not in that position right now.
I got one quick question. Got to run to a break here before we finish up. And Carol says Baldwin County has a surge of retirees in our area with snowbirds. Will that affect the permanent residents' ability to get a dose of the limited vaccine?
If they meet the criteria, I would expect that if they have a healthcare provider and can show ID, they will be vaccinated.
Okay. All right. Coming right back. We got so many more questions and just minutes left with Dr. Chambers.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, just a couple minutes left here, and continue our conversation with Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department. Always great to get him on. All right, so I learned something. So 1A is frontline healthcare workers, folks in nursing homes. 1B, now we're talking about folks that are, what did you say, how old and up was the change?
Yeah, so 75 years of age and up, and then that's also where our frontline essential workers, like our, you know, police departments, that type of thing, would be vaccinated.
Okay. And then, so those folks, and then we could talk about the other categories, but for everybody listening, what is the process? Is there a place to go sign? Is there a sign-up sheet, or how does this work?
Yeah. So, you know, for 1A, it was pretty straightforward because we could work through the systems to do that. When we start talking about people that are not affiliated with the hospital or with EMS or something like that, then it becomes more difficult. And I hear, I you know, that questions we're getting of, oh, where do, can I put my name on a list?
Mm-hmm.
So right as of right now, there is no list.
There's no list. Okay.
There is no list. However, the quote-unquote list is a little complicated because there's more built into it. We have to make sure we're tracking you, that what vaccine you got. We need to be able to get you back in either 21 days for Pfizer, 28 days for Moderna. And it also has to link to a distribution system. So there's some complexities there. What the state of Alabama wants to do is for everybody to work on the same system, which makes sense. And they are in the process of deploying this system so that you can go online, you can put your name on there. The other thing, though, that's going to happen is as more vaccines become available, you're going to be able to get this very likely through your healthcare provider. So when we get to the general public, which is phase two, which will, again, likely be April time frame at the earliest, the availability of the vaccines are going to be much more widespread. But I want to give everybody a website. It's called vaccinefinder.org. VaccinFinder.org. If you will go in there, you can track the COVID-19 vaccine availability and what phase we're in. And that will also, if you put in, for instance, influenza, you can find out everywhere you can get influenza vaccine. But right now, that's really the only thing that's out there. The technology is coming, and as we open this up for the 1Bs, 1Cs, the technology will be there to manage those that, you know, need to be on the list.
There we go. All right. So we will post up that link on our social media platforms and go ahead and schedule to get you back on soon. Dr. Chambers, is always a pleasure.
Great. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right. There he is. Dr. Scott Chambers, Mobile County Health Department. Hope we got some questions answered on that one. It's always informative. Coming up next, it's Spanish Fort Mayor Mike McMillan joins us. Amazon Distribution Center. What does it all mean for Spanish Fort? We'll do that next.